Hello, podcasters. Left, right and centre, the premier news source on student radio, back again for another week. What you're about to hear is the seventh episode of the show, featuring stories including intelligence balls-ups, affirmative action debates, and crazy news from Poland. Don't forget you can contact us via email at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the issues. Left, right and centre, about as useful as a gay elephant.
Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm stuck in the middle with you. Left, right, and centre.
I just don't think that theme will ever grow old for us.
It is so awesome.
Boogie in the studio.
Every week we like it more and more. There's a bit of boogieing, bit of singing going on. Well, not singing. Anyway, left, right, and centre, we're back to weave some more radio magic for you.
One more week, yeah.
Could you make us sound any more pretentious?
Well, I think you and I, we all do reasonably well, Casey.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not pretentious if you meet the high standards.
I am Casey, as per usual. I'm joined by Matteo, as per usual. Tim's return from the absence last week.
I have come back. I think I've slept an et. I et enough. No, et is correct.
Et is correct.
No, I think I've slept and et sufficiently to tide me over for this 1 hour in which I'll be doing
so
neither.
So you can make up words, but we're not allowed to.
No, right, et is a word.
No, that'll come in handy later. But you cover that very well.
Tim. So Casey, Matteo, Tim, as per usual. Chris, not per usual. He's not here today, but we've got someone better, maybe.
We've got someone new, maybe.
It's yet to be different face. It's Tristan. Yeah.
It's Tristan.
Hello. Tristan. Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, pretty excited.
You might have heard Tristan before on the show. He's presented a little bit of an environment segment in the past. But he's come here to co-host with us for the show. What have we got tonight?
We're going to have a talk about affirmative action.
Yeah, we're also... what else? We're going to talk about the carbon pollution reduction scheme, which has been in the news a lot around campus and just in the national media as well.
We've also got our usual spate of ridiculous news stories in Rapidfire News, along with a couple of serious ones.
Ridiculous and terrific.
And terrific.
That's what you meant, Casey.
Should we start with another slightly ridiculous story?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. Those of you who watch the have a look at the news will have seen a very, very funny story coming out of the UK. The police chief, actually the most senior counter-terrorism official in the UK, whose name is Bob Quick, well, he's former most senior counter-terrorism official.
Not quick of mind.
No, has resigned after he was walking into Downing Street, which is, of course, where the Prime Minister lives, to give a briefing on some security issues. And among other things, he had in his pile a briefing paper concerning a bunch of... counter-terrorism operations that were going to happen. Of course, he had the briefing paper with the piece of paper displayed to the cameras. And so...
As you do.
Yeah. And so the entirety of the press corps got a very good image
of... This wasn't a confidential document, was it?
No. It was marked on the top secret operation, Operation Pathway, it was called.
Yeah. It wasn't just a shopping list. It wasn't like milk, eggs, bread. It was more like terrorists.
I believe it had addresses. Names and addresses on it.
I don't think there were any names. It had addresses and locations and nationalities of suspects. And it was quite, the day after. In fact, the raids themselves had to be moved forward. They had to be expedited because of the security breach.
Why even have the manila envelopes if you're just not going to use them?
Yeah, I know. Like you can see the pictures, and I think we'll probably put a link up on the blog. Because they're absolutely hilarious. You can see exactly what's been written.
With some censorship, of course.
Yeah, well, like, obviously can't publish all the details. But, he's standing there where he's got a manila folder and another binder. And then sitting on the top, he has the document marked Secret Operation Pathway and listing the locations and nationalities of Al-Qaeda suspects.
But wait, there's more. Just it's a case of life imitating art, just like pretty much every movie ever made. There's a happy ending. Turns out they captured some suspects. They captured 12 of them throughout 10 different addresses throughout northern England.
That's right.
So sort of the end result is terrorists don't watch the news to find out that their addresses have been exposed.
Well, I think they're busy doing their nefarious deeds, cooking up their little plots.
It's not easy.
It's not easy,
I'm sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, you don't really have time for stuff like watching the news to see if they're about to... bang down your door and arrest you.
Yeah, well, terrorism, it's a hard job. Let's have more after this.
Many people tune into this show, or so I'm told by the presenters, but up to this point, there appears to be a noticeable lack of emphasis on the area of developments in dinosaurology. Well, no longer. This is Dinosaur News. A shocking scandal is sweeping the field of dinosaurology. Scientists say that Baryonyx, if indeed that was what it called itself, may have fed on fish, perhaps, rather than small rodents, if they existed, as was previously suspected, maybe. It also appears that the animal may conceivably have had its nose on its thumb, rather than its snout, as was previously thought, thanks to information allegedly gleaned from a dig in
Cincinnati
last month. I caught up with home-based birdologist James Newman, who said this.
What? I don't know why you're talking to me. I just study birds.
In this interview, his opinion, rather failing to justify his opinion on the matter. New developments in the field of air dinosaurs, or dinosaurs of the air now, as a Polish dig team find the bones of a pteranodon in a local quarry. Quick to alert the media, they claim this proves that the animals may have spent as much as 50% of their time burrowing underground, perhaps. And finally, scientists say that Allosaurus, probably a large meat-eatersaurus if it existed, might have possibly been closely related to the ammonite, perhaps, if it existed, which it could possibly have done, maybe. This has been Dinosaur News. And now, back to the studio.
Now, we are going to have a chat about, because, you know...
That's Tim's favourite.
Apparently, that's what I say
all the
time.
It's your thing, Tim. It's your radio thing.
Indeed.
I think we've been here long enough to establish sort of little niches.
Yeah.
Little things.
Mine's that I eat and sleep.
Anyway, continue. Sorry.
We're going to have a chat about affirmative action and just...
What's the spark for the story?
We're going to have a look at the spark for the story, which is... A story by The Australian, I think yesterday, the day before, talking about how the upcoming 2010 election in Victoria, male candidates are finding it very difficult to be put up for pre-selection because the ALP at, I think, 2006...
In their infinite wisdom.
Well, I think they have done, Casey, but we'll get to that in a second. They put in a system effectively whereby by 2012 they need to have 40% of all of the seats that they hold being held by women.
Is this 40% of seats that go up for election or 40% of seats in Parliament?
No, they have to have 40% of the seats that they hold have to be occupied by women, okay. And that's federally and state level. And if state governments don't pull it off, then the national executive gets to essentially do, you know, they can overturn pre-selection results and they can...
So it effectively means they have to put women into winnable seats.
Yeah.
Not even just any seats, but safe seats.
Yeah. And so essentially because there are very few men retiring, most of the pre-selection for seats that aren't already held by the Labor Party are going to be by women in Victoria because they need the numbers.
Does this mean that some people may be kicked out of their seats, in fact?
I'm not sure. From my reading, it doesn't look like there's going to be many pre-selection challenges on this extent. But, you know, if they don't get the 40%, then the national executive of the Labor Party is empowered to actually force them to do things like that. So it's quite interesting. And we were going to have a conversation more generally about affirmative action and whether or not we think this is okay, whether, you know, people are being chosen not necessarily, as some would say, on their merits, but because of characteristics like gender.
Yeah, well, maybe brace yourselves. I'm going to maybe take a slight hop to the right here and set out my stall and say, I think affirmative action is bullshit. Frankly, I think especially in this context, this story... Where I'm not sure if we should be led to believe there's some sort of institutional discrimination against females in politics, because of course politics is female dominated. But I think that artificially increasing the proportion, you know, of their representation at sort of a political level is I disagree with that so strongly, and I think that it really should be done on merit, not on gender, which people cannot control.
I have to agree with you to an extent, Terry. I think that obviously in politics it's quite important to have the best candidate up for selection. But I also think that it's hard to put numbers on these things. But I do think there should be ways which women should be encouraged at least to stand for different seats, seeing as it is quite a male dominated area.
Well, I'm gonna. Perhaps mirror Matteo and take a little hop to the left here. This is an issue, you know, and obviously you can talk about numbers being, you know, worrying about numbers, but I think in a society that's, you know, it's 50-50, the Labor Party are trying to institute a 40-40-20 rule whereby it's 40 men, 40 women, and 20 can be either. And I just wonder whether in a discipline, an area like politics, which is so I don't know why we keep talking about it being male-dominated. Is that really the issue? Shouldn't we aspire to be having, especially in public office, but that's not the only issue in places like business executives, shouldn't women be given those opportunities? And if there is institutional discrimination, which I think you have to say there is, I mean, in Victoria they only have 26% of women in Labor-held seats, I think that's got to be evidence of some level of institutionalised discrimination, and there need to be efforts made to redress that.
But I don't understand why we're paying attention to their gender at all. My issue. Yeah. I don't understand why that's a factor.
As Tristan touched upon very ably before, politics more than most fields is a field where you just want to get the best person. Whether it doesn't matter about their gender, and I think you can say it's institutional discrimination that's preventing women from being more represented in politics. But I would say, you know, of course, break down the barriers to them being represented. Make it as easy as you can for them. Get the news out there. But then, at some level, if women or you know, just like any class of society don't want to be involved in a particular field, I don't think there's any sense in forcing them. And I really do think that that's what's happening with affirmative action in this context.
Well, nobody's really forcing anybody. I think the point you guys are trying to make is, you know, why is it that we have to get women into these jobs when, you know, why can't we just base it on merit? And I think the response to that and the reason why we have affirmative action is that without processes like these sorts of barriers that have been built up over thousands of years of discrimination on basis of race and gender don't get broken down. You can't sit there and say, well, we should let, you know, I'll pivot a bit to another example of affirmative action. You can't sit down and say that we should let people into universities in the United States based entirely on intelligence and test scores, because then you're never going to begin to redress the vast difference in educational outcomes for African American and white Americans.
Are you saying that African Americans are stupider, Tim?
No, well, yeah, okay. I know you're trying to get me to take the bait there, but that, you know, it is a...
Oh, come on.
Okay.
What do the figures say?
The figures are, well, look, there's been quite a bit of evidence of work done on this, and I think it's an issue. I think it's, on the scientific literature, it's an issue pretty much beyond contention that IQs of African Americans in the United States are lower than those of non-African Americans. And the point I would make is that the only way you're going to have some system of equality between African Americans and white Americans is to have systems like affirmative action.
I think we need to address the reasons why these statistics are saying that the IQ. I'm not saying the statistics are wrong. Maybe they're true. Why exactly are African American IQs lower? Surely, if we fix that problem, then that fixes the problem of entrance to university.
Absolutely, and affirmative action is simply a way of doing that by increasing the portions of African Americans taking educational spots in higher education. It's one of the determining factors, decreasing differentials in IQ.
Can I just say, this reminds me of a quote by voiceover, you know, narrator extraordinaire Morgan Freeman, where he said that Americans shouldn't celebrate Black History Month because Black History Month is American History Month. Black history is American history. I think the most effective way to break down these barriers, be they racial or gender-based, is really to make it a merit-based system, because especially in this political context of which we've been discussing, positive discrimination aimed towards one group is necessarily negative discrimination against another group. And I just really strongly believe that's completely the wrong way to go about it. How many completely deserving males are going to be denied political, you know, some political seat because of this? Because females have to be represented when they're not choosing to enter into politics as much as men.
Well, no, but nobody's forcing, you know, women to enter. This is just about making an effort to get to some level of quality in public office.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I'd like to see, to bring it kind of back to the Labor MPs issue. I want to see elections based on anonymity of candidates. I'd like all campaigning to be done in cardboard boxes. I'd like any interviews to be done in front of a black screen so that you could voices mask. You don't know if they're a man or a woman. You don't know if they're black or white. You don't know if they're ugly. Equal opportunity for ugly people. Well, does that not reduce discrimination? Does that not give everyone the fair go?
You don't. I think you're drawing rather a flippant comparison there. I think the thousands of years of institutionalized discrimination against women, not only in politics, but in things like business, and many other examples of situations where there's institutionalized discrimination. I don't think we should be so flippant about, you know, about breaking down these barriers. And I think a good affirmative action policy like the one the ALP have in their constitution, and I'd be interested to know what the Greens have as well, Kristen. That, you know, I think this is an excellent way of breaking down barriers like that.
Okay, do you at least accept that maybe if we do have this affirmative action policy, it should eventually die because we should have this equality?
Oh yeah, eventually, but I think it's a bit of a pipe dream to say, well, you know, in the interest of fairness, we'll just give everybody the same opportunities and expect, you know, the whole problem to come out in the wash. It doesn't come out in the wash. You have to make an effort, and affirmative action policies are one way of doing that.
But Tim, you've told us that there should obviously be a breaking down of barriers, and that women shouldn't be forced to enter politics, and that should be about equality. Tell me, where is the equality in giving 50% representation to a gender that is only that it holds significantly less than half of total representation? Less than half of politicians are women, and yet we're saying that half of Labour politicians in New South Wales should be women.
Well, it's 40%. I don't think, you know, half is quite an optimistic goal, and obviously, sure, you know, and there are, especially in the case of women, reasons why women should be, you know, women are going to have different, there's going to be different portions, but 40% I don't think is unreasonable. I think that's exactly where it should be.
Well, I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't know if this is the correct way to be forcing it. YouTube, but this is getting quite heated in here actually, so let's go to this. In 1859, war broke out in the San Juan Islands off the coast of North America after a British pig was shot to death by an American farmer, the hilariously named Lyman Cutler. The pig was eating Cutler's potatoes, so in retaliation, he shot the pig. The pig's owner, less hilariously named Charles Griffin, demanded $100 compensation, but Cutler refused to pay, declaring that it was eating my potatoes. In response, Griffin retorted that it is up to you to keep your potatoes out of my pig. British authorities threatened to arrest Cutler for his refusal to pay, and when the American settlers on San Juan Island requested military protection, war was imminent. 66 American soldiers under the command of Captain George Pickett were sent to prevent any British forces from landing. In response, the British sent 3 warships. This armed threat continued to escalate until there were 461 Americans with 14 cannons occupying one side of the island, opposed by 5 British warships mounting 70 guns and carrying 2,140 men. In all this time, no shots were fired. Each party occupied one side of the island, with neither being willing to risk mutually assured destruction. Notably, British Brigadier General William Selby Harney declared that 2 great nations in a war over a squabble about a pig was foolish. Throughout the entire war, neither camp fired a shot, and negotiations on a joint military occupation were eventually agreed. For 12 years from 1860, the British and Americans each kept a garrison of 100 troops on the island, and enjoyed an active and friendly social life. Indeed, the two camps were so friendly that the biggest threat to peace during the period was the large amount of alcohol available. In 1872, the standoff was referred to a commission headed by Kaiser Wilhelm I of Germany, who was regarded at the time as a man of peace. Kaiser Wilhelm ruled in favour of the United States, and on November 25th, 1872, the British withdrew from San Juan Island, making them the losers of the war. The Pig War, also known as the Pig and Potato War, or the San Juan Boundary Dispute. Duration, 13 years. Number of casualties, 1. Namely, the pig.
What are we going to do now, Casey?
I think we should do this.
Same thing we do every week, Tim.
Yeah, that's this. Academic research from the United States has found that Facebook is having a detrimental effect on students' university results. Aaron Karpinski, a researcher in the Education Department at Ohio State University, said that our study shows people who spend more time on Facebook spend less time studying. As part of her study, Ms. Karpinski asked 219 US undergraduates and graduates about their study practices and general internet use, with specific reference to Facebook. It was found that 68% of students who used Facebook had a significantly lower grade point average than those who did not use the site. Instead of studying, however, students have turned to Facebook groups to remedy the situation. The Sydney University-based group I Want to Sue Facebook If I Fail University has almost 1,000 members who cite the social networking forum as the primary cause for a spike in the number of people failing university. Tim, you're one of the few university students remaining without a Facebook account. Yeah, you seem to be doing quite well at having a low grade point average. What's the secret to your success?
I'm very talented in that respect. I shudder to think. I have two things to say here. I shudder to think what I'd be like if I had a Facebook account. And also, was that a Facebook group complaining about Facebook?
Yeah. No,
okay, why don't they take some personal responsibility and do what I do and just put your foot down and say, I don't want this.
No, yeah. Tim, how meta is that? There's a group on the site complaining about the site itself. And I don't know.
I don't know if there's any grounds to sue, though.
No, none.
Just no grounds to sue personal responsibility.
If they have enough effort to make a group about how Facebook is detrimental to their university results, surely they can just delete Facebook with the same amount of effort.
But yeah, they haven't gone to much effort. They've created the group. There's been a flurry of members joining. Then there's just no activity on it at all. Bit of Facebook thing there for you guys. Sorry, Tim, you sort of missed that.
No. Yeah, well, I've made a Facebook group. It's a lot of work, tell me. Tell me about it. It's the Left Front Centre. You should join it, by the way. Voters in a small Missouri town have re-elected their popular mayor to a fourth term, despite his death from a heart attack in March. Heroically named Harry Stonebreaker died aged 69, but not before ballot papers had been printed and absentee voting begun. Stonebreaker secured 90% of the vote in the 723-strong town of Winfield. Lincoln County Clerk Elaine Luck likened the outcome to Missouri's US Senate race in 2000, which was won by Democrat Mel Carnahan, who had died in a plane crash weeks earlier. I figured he'd win because he seemed to get even more popular after he died, just like Carnahan, she was quoted as saying. Guys, putting aside for a moment the tragedy of Stonebreaker's death and the hilarity of his name, how would you feel as the losing candidate knowing that 9 out of 10 people prefer a man incapable of governing because he's dead instead of you? Politics not the right career choice?
Yeah, I think so. Is that that's Missouri?
Missouri.
So they elected a Democratic senator after they died?
I'm not sure if he was Democratic.
I think, I don't know. Anyway, it's just...
Oh, Missouri's U.S. Senate. Yes, they're Democratic. Yep.
Is that what it takes for a Democrat to get elected in Missouri?
They have to die. Can I just say, with
a very popular one.
With a name like Winfield, I'm very surprised it was a heart attack and not lung cancer. Yeah.
As part of a publicity stunt to oppose pet stores, animal rights group PETA has asked the Pet Shop Boys to change their name. The group wrote to the band requesting they change their name to the, quote, Rescue Shelter Boys. The letter said, most dogs and cats sold in pet shops are sourced from profit-hungry breeders who may have bred them in cramped, filthy conditions. Exercise is minimal and they often never leave their cages until the day that they're sold. On their website, the Pet Shop Boys declined the request, saying, PETA has written to the Pet Shop Boys with a request they're unable to agree to, but nonetheless think raises an issue worth thinking about. Upon hearing the news, one person posted on the official PETA website asking if the group was going to go after US rock singer Meatloaf instead. If Meatloaf was to change his name, what do you think he should change it to?
Just Loaf, I think. It's like bread-based.
Tofu loaf?
Tofu, soy loaf.
Halloumi loaf.
Yeah. Mm. This is satire, right? This isn't Peter being serious, please.
It has to be a joke.
All right, yeah.
I mean, surely they have a sense of humour.
Perhaps a bit of publicity stunt on their part to get some sort of a...
Yeah, I mean, and the Pet Shop Boys are probably thinking, hey, all news is good news. They've sort of been, their profile's been lowered in the past few years, so hey, bit of press.
Everybody wins.
Everyone wins from Peter. After the recent news of Left, Right and Centre panellist Timothy officially turning old the other week, reports have suggested that co-host Christopher is now elderly after having celebrated his 21st birthday over the weekend. Unconfirmed reports suggest that Christopher celebrated his birthday by playing lawn bowls, knitting a sweater and yelling at youths. Now that Christopher's an old man, does this mean we're going to have to speak louder in studio so that he can hear us?
Yeah, he has problems already. I mean, Well, yeah, no, it's true, but I've actually seen him since his birthday, and the first thing he did is he's actually forgot my name.
Oh.
And then he sort of, you know, like he yelled as if he couldn't really hear.
Has he got the old walking frame out? Because I know he's been keeping it for his
birthday. he's got the Zimmer frame out. That's gonna come out soon. Yeah, Chris, old, just not as spry as he used to be.
Might get him like one of those nose hair trimmers for his birthday.
No, he'd appreciate that.
I think so. It's useful. Actor Hugh Jackman has been forced to apologise after he tweeted a message on social networking site Twitter, which got the name of the Sydney Opera House wrong. The tweet read, having lunch on the harbour across from the Opera Centre, loving life. Apparently the tweet was written by one of Jackman's staff in the United States, with Jackman explaining, I communicated across the phone, and when that got translated by someone American in my office, it came out all wrong. So it was my communication, but not my typing. Twitter is so great because it's an intimate way for celebrities to talk to their fans. Should celebrity Twitterers write their own tweets, or at least provide attribution as to the author of their tweet?
If they can spell, then sure. I believe he also got the spelling of the word harbour wrong as well.
Yeah, and centre.
I'm sorry, what's Twitter?
Yeah, no, this is something that'll have to be explained to us. I think Casey, perhaps, I don't know about you, Tristan, perhaps being the only one here with the Twitter account, you
being
can explain.
The cool one.
You can elucidate this for us, please.
It's essentially just a kind of if you know what microblogging is. Just a way to post very short messages on the internet and share them with people.
Okay, well, I have those. They're called well, not on the internet, they're called text messages.
Yeah, but everyone can see them. You can make hilarious jokes to the entire internet.
Sorry, what's Twitter?
Tweet, tweet. Poland, this week's Poland's constitutional court has upheld a ruling that drunken cyclists should be treated like drunken motorists if caught and face prison. Under a law passed in the year 2000, riding a bike under the influence of alcohol attracts a fine of up to up to 2 years in prison, depending on their level of intoxication. Many courts apply the stricter penalty, and the average sentence is 11.5 months imprisonment. This has been criticised by the prison services and some judges, such as...
Jarosław Szelecki.
Yeah, I'll let the Polish person pronounce that. A judge in Western Poland calling it absurd and draconian. He argued that intoxicated cyclists should be treated like drunken pedestrians and face a fine, as both use their own muscles to achieve motion. The Constitutional Court, however, ruled that cyclists use public roads and are considerably more dangerous because of the speed they travel.
What now, if they use the footpath?
Yeah, well, you're not allowed to use the footpath, I believe.
Hmm. Well, I have a friend or two who may or may not have cycled home intoxicated on an occasion or two. And look, you know, they're just so annoying as it is. They're just, like, sort of swerving all over the road. They're making it difficult for motorists who are sort of rightful owners of the road.
You know what the solution is? We should ban alcohol.
Analysts and the federal opposition say the government's plan to build a $43 billion national network promising speeds of 100 megabits a second won't come cheap. Paul Broad, chief executive of AAPT, which is Australia's third largest telco, has warned consumers that they'll have to pay at least $200 a month to use the federal government's high-speed broadband network or pay less for slower speeds. Broad told Late Line Business that, "I always get reminded of the Cross City Tunnel, you know, wonderful piece of infrastructure, but no one wants to use it for the price. The minimum price most analysts are predicting is $100 a month, which is twice the price that many people pay today. The reality is to get a commercial return on a project of this scale, consumers will be paying higher prices," he said. So, guys, does this come down to how much we're willing to pay for fast porn, illegally downloaded music and wacky news, as we want to do?
Apparently it does.
Well, I mean, we never have a shortage of wacky news, but I have actually recently been banned from the internet four times, so perhaps this
for the fast porn?
Well, the naked ladies and, I don't know, the music maybe, so maybe this could come handy for me. I can save up my monies. And, take advantage of this.
Yep. $100 a month worth of monies?
Sure.
Another Polish story now. A Polish politician has criticised his local zoo for acquiring a gay elephant. Media in Poznan?
Yes.
I said it right. In Poland's west, have reported that the elephant, fabulously named Nino, prefers the company of men and will most likely not procreate. We haven't paid 37 million zloty. For the largest elephant house in Europe, just to have a gay elephant live there, Conservative councillor Michał Gzez was quoted as saying. We, presumably the zoo, were meant to have a herd, but as Nino prefers male friends over females, how will he produce offspring? The head of the zoo, in rebuttal, said that the 10-year-old Nino may be too young to decide whether he prefers males or females, as elephants only reach sexual maturity at 14. Guys, I for one feel that these comments are fair. Surely it's common knowledge that if you haven't sired at least one child before puberty, you never will, right?
Yeah, I think elephants they don't reach maturity until same age people do, don't they?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is it seeming like Poland week this week on Rapid Fire News, and I'd like to assure people that this is, of course, taken out of context, not truly representative of the Polish social and political climate, but you know what? These two stories have it pretty much right on. This is what the Constitutional Court does, and this is what councillors complain about. Gay elephants.
Go Poland. A man faces a driving ban and a hefty fine after being caught on a Norwegian motorway having sex with his girlfriend while speeding. After noticing the car was, quote, swerving erratically and travelling at 33 kilometres over the speed limit, police pulled the car over at a rest area, but not before filming the exploit for evidence. Why they did it on a highway with such a high risk, we don't know, Steinhagen, a superintendent with the local police district, told the AFP news agency. The vehicle was veering from one side to the other because the woman was sitting on the man's lap while he was driving and doing the act, shall we say, he added. He couldn't see much because her back was in the way. Despite her role in the incident, police kindly allowed the 21-year-old woman to drive her lover home. So, guys, are these two sexual trailblazers or simply people looking for something to do after the radio had broken?
Of course, the radio was tuned to left, right and centre.
Of course.
We have a big market in Norway, I think. Pretty popular up there, Scandinavia.
Yeah. Well, it is such an exciting show, you know. Gets people excited.
No, absolutely. I just wonder if the male, I'm sure he must have been enjoying getting into it with his lady friend, if at any point in the proceedings he was actually conscious of the fact that he was going quite a bit of the speed limit, where he sort of asked, you know, oh, honey, can you just sort of move over in that direction so I can see how fast I'm actually going? But no, I guess they all had fun, right?
Well, until the police came filmed them.
Yeah, that's unseemly. Please, move on.
Five election officials and one non-official in Kentucky have been charged with a list of crimes including manipulating the vote totals in electronic voting machines, certifying elections that they knew to be rigged, and arranging for votes to be sold. According to Ars Technica, the vote manipulation technique here was an exploit of a simple UI design flaw. The perpetrators allegedly told voters that pressing the vote button would actually cast their vote, so they would leave the booth right after pressing it. However, pressing the vote button actually takes voters to a confirmation screen, so their vote was uncast when they left the booth. Perpetrators then just had to walk into the booth and change the vote. Among the six people indicted were a circuit court judge, two election officials, and a county clerk. The conspiracy was apparently bipartisan, looks to have been aimed more at increasing the personal fortunes of the co-conspirators by placing them in a local position of influence, rather than enhancing any National Party standing. Hey guys, I think I smell KFC, not the very greasy chicken-based food of questionable quality, but rather Kentucky fraud conspiracy. You like my joke?
Can I just say that was my joke, and I'm pretty happy with it, so I'm feeling kind of smug, a bit satisfied. I think I'll just sit back, don't have to make any more comments for this rapid-fire news story.
Yeah. No, so that was Kentucky, a circuit court judge was caught rigging votes.
Yeah, that's to get himself elected.
Yeah, that's about the worst thing you can do in terms of corruption. Yeah. Right, we are going to talk about something now. We're going to talk about the government's carbon pollution reduction scheme.
Well, we talk about things a lot of the time, Tim. This is something specific. We're going to have a chat about the CPRS.
Yep, don't say we have a chat about it. You say that all the time, Mateo. You should stop doing
I do it to mock you, Tim. Light irony, it's how I roll.
The CPRS, essentially the Rudd government, has set up a cap and trade scheme, and their aim is to reduce greenhouse emissions by 5%. By 2020, and they've conditioned an additional 10%, so a 15% reduction on international cooperation. So, what do you think about that, Tristan?
Well, there are many things I think about this, Tim. To start with, obviously, I think the reductions did not go far enough, and I'm sure that there are many people who would agree with me there. There are quite a few other things that I do not agree with, such as the fact that big polluters, the mining industries, the petroleum industry, things like that, they're almost rewarded through this scheme because they're basically given these permits instead of having to pay for them, like smaller businesses and things like that. There are only around 1,000 companies that are included in this at the moment. That is set to expand, however. It only covers around 75% of Australia's carbon emissions if it comes into effect, I should say. The other thing is that it actually sets a lower barrier to Australia's carbon emissions. So what that means is that once all these permits are given out, all these people, these companies, are allowed to pollute up to the amount that the permits allow them to. They can trade them within themselves, but it means that individuals cannot actually reduce their emissions if they were to, say, put solar panels on their roof or convert their heaters to gas or something like that. So it actually brings a bottom level as well as a top level to the carbon emissions of Australia.
Tristan demonstrating there to us that he knows quite
a lot more than me.
Quite a bit about this issue. You actually have some agreement from me here, Tristan. I think... Whereas if we're talking internationally, there are countries who, because they were less culpable for the situation as it is now, maybe shouldn't be held to the same standards as industrialized countries are now. I'm thinking the BRIC countries, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China. They argue, in my view, with a point that they shouldn't be held to the same standards. But when you have a country as industrialized as Australia, and when you're segmenting it so far as to, like you said, not really discourage big polluters at all, and look, really, this is such a measly band-aid solution. Tim, don't get me wrong. This is doing good stuff, but this is something that should be supplementary to other, just much more meaningful actions, is what I think.
I think this is pragmatic politics, and what I do like the sort of the greeny answer with, you know, I hope everyone was listening there to the words like big producers and large companies. These are leftist euphemisms. These are huge corporations, and they don't just sit there and pollute the planet. They provide an essential service for the continuation of, you know, the human race, and they also employ thousands and thousands of Australians. And I don't think people should be so flippant and make such insidious insinuations about people who essentially keep a whole bunch of people off unemployment queues.
Well, they do that at the same time as making unfathomable profits every single year. It's incredible the amount of money that these companies make. I don't really think that a $40 per ton tax on these permits is really going to do much to these companies.
Well, you can't just quote nominal figures like that. I mean, as I understand it, I think the initial estimate is $25 per ton for the thing. But I don't think you can just make nominal declarations. These companies make huge amounts of money, but they're only going to get charged $25 per you know thing. Look, the fact of the matter is that members of the business council have come out and said that's a significant amount of money, and there has to be some level of middle ground taken by the government, especially in economic times where these mining companies are not making the huge profits that has brought the ire of the left on them.
Of course, the government has to take a middle ground, but I think they have not taken middle ground. There's far more to be done than what they have taken. This is really just a representative step, and they're not really doing anything about tackling the issue that is climate change. It is a far bigger issue than many people predict. Really, in the future, if we don't do anything serious about this, then the issues that we face, climates which are unpredictable, they will affect these types of industries. They will affect people's jobs. They will affect people's ability to live in areas which were once thought to be, you know, productive areas. It's a far bigger issue than one can just merely put upon these large companies.
Can I just bump in and say I have to be a little bit careful here, because this issue was talked about when I was actually on an episode of Left, Right, and Center last year. Of course, this incarnation's poor cousin. And I was lambasted for using a bit of economic jargon. I mean, look, people said they didn't like it. I had fun, which I think is important. And this actually ties in with some of the study I've been doing, interestingly enough, lately. It's all about you have to appeal to the polluters. I'm using air quotes there because it's a blanket term. You have to appeal to their sense of reason and rationality. You can't go appealing to emotion here. You have to make it worth their while to streamline their production such that they're polluting less. It's all about incentives, really. That's where economics comes into it.
Yeah. How about this incentive? Stop polluting or you're illegal.
Oh, yeah, well, that's great. You know what they'll do then? They'll just move offshore to some poor African country.
We don't need them. Leaving
thousands of Australians out of a job and moving to a country that's perfectly happy to let them pollute as much as they like.
And Casey, can I just say, Casey, I love you a lot, one of my best friends, but you know what causes pollution? Production of any sort. You know what's important? Production of any sort.
Which is why you need some level of pragmatic governance. Now, I'd like to talk about, you know, climate change all day, and I would be very happy to. But I think the more important issue here is, are they going to get this thing passed? And I think there's probably some consensus around the panel.
I think we have an agreement in that.
Yeah, that there is absolutely no hope of getting this thing passed. What the government needs to pull off is they need to either get... Well, essentially, if you ask
me... They won't get it passed because it's too tough, too light?
No, they need... The point is that there's no middle ground. The lower bound on what the Greens are willing to accept is higher than the higher bound that the Nationals and Fielding are willing to accept.
So there's no crossover between anybody's wants, really.
Yeah, between the independents and the small parties. And the only possible way they can get this passed into legislation is if they get the support of the coalition. And if Turnbull or Costello, whoever's leader at the time, does that, they will be handing on a silver platter a win to Rudd, to Swan, and to Wong, and they will just never do it. It's simply not going to happen. And so, you know, this is the, you know, one of these great environmental issues, but as with so many issues, and especially climate change, the fact of the matter is that governments have to do this. They have to start with what are piddling little targets, I agree, and in order to get something done, to start getting some movement on this. And they're just not, look at this 5%, it's not much of a target, and they're not going to get it passed.
But the thing is that a carbon pollution reduction scheme is thought of as a system which can actually do a huge deal towards resolving the issue of climate change. I mean, there could be a large percentage of the carbon emissions taken out if there is a substantial, you know, a proper policy put forward on this. It cannot be used as merely just a representative means to an end.
Mm. Yeah, so there we have it. At Left, Right, and Centre, we educate, entertain, and inform a little bit as well.
And argue a lot.
Yeah, that's Casey.
Very heated day today.
No, it's good.
It's enjoyable.
I've been enjoying it. Yeah, Tristan's enjoying it. What now?
This.
The Universal Survival Guide, a guide to survival in any conceivable situation. Part 2, Limbs. Take a moment to examine the structure of your body. You will likely find that you are equipped with the basic humanoid shape. Two legs, two arms, a head, and a sort of shapeless mass connecting them together known as the body. You will also likely be equipped with various accessories. Ears, for example, or you wouldn't be listening to the guide. Various organs designed for life support, or you won't be listening for very long. And other features which are more purely decorative, such as the eyebrows and nose. It is not advisable to remove any of these physical accessories as they are not easily reattached and contrary to initial perceptions, they can be quite useful. Other animals also have limbs. The common or garden cow, for example, can have up to four legs, much like the Canadian moose, which also has the distinguishing feature of having anything up to two eyes. Using your eyes, you can see things, unless you can't. If you can, you may have seen an egg. There are many kinds of egg, such as fried eggs, scrambled eggs, and ostrich eggs. Ostrich eggs come from Ostrich, which is a small village near Kent in the country. Exactly which country, it is hard to say, but the word England is a rough pronunciation. To pronounce something, you must press your lips together and think very hard about whatever you wish to pronounce. There is an important distinction between the words pronounce and book. A book, or basic object-oriented knowledge system, is a collection of a number of leaves of paper, most commonly 265, fastened together with a hinge or spine at one side. Since the development of informational programs like the guide in other formats, such as the radio, the book has become largely obsolete, but you may be able to find them in your local museum. Museums, or morgues, are large, dusty buildings with lots of dead animals in them. They are quiet, they echo, and they attract fat people and pigeons. There are many theories regarding the apparent positive correlation between how archaic a building is and the amount of pigeons it routinely attracts, just as there are many theories about teenagers. For instance, Paul Johnston has postulated that if you were to remove all internal pieces of a teenager, outward function would not be impaired and may even become more frequent. This has been part two of the Universal Survival Guide. For more insightful guidance to survival in the universe, keep listening last week.
Boy, was that a fun show, guys.
That was a lot of fun.
One of our favourites. We doth our respective caps to Tristan for coming in and helping us.
Absolutely.
No respect needed. It was my pleasure completely. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, and I think now that Chris is elderly, I think he's going to be a bit infirm. He's not going to be able to make it down to the station every single week.
Do you think we need some young blood there?
He'd be putting together a retirement plan, I think.
Yeah, probably. I hope we're in his will. But it looks like, Tristan, I don't know, if you want to come along more regularly.
It wouldn't be out of the question.
It's yours if you want it, my friend.
It's the end of the show. We'd like to encourage all of you to visit our blog, studentradio.wordpress.com, email us at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au, visit our Facebook group at Left Right and Centre.
Or how about, like, write on the Facebook
group?
That'd be nice.
And listen to Student Radio Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Listen to Break It Down every night at 11 p.m. Listen to us on Tuesdays. Listen to Blue Monkey Jazz on Wednesdays at midnight. Listen to Illuminati with Gem and Madison on Thursdays at midnight.
Pretty sure it's just Gemma.
Well,
what do you mean?
What do you mean, Tim?
Look, I'm pretty convinced this Madison person doesn't exist. Like, I don't know about you guys. I'm pretty sure it's just Gemma putting
You've
on a voice.
You've never met her?
No.
Well,
no.
You think it's just Gemma putting on a voice?
Absolutely. That is exactly what I think
she's pretty. She's a pretty talented girl, but you reckon she could do that on air?
Well, evidently she is. I have been Timothy.
I have been Mateo, like always.
I have been Casey, and that's been Chris. No, it hasn't been Chris, it's been Tristan.
Yeah.
It has been Tristan indeed.
That was Left, Right and Centre, over for another week. If you've enjoyed this vintage episode, check out our blog at studentradio.wordpress.com. You can also read about the other shows on Student Radio there. Maybe if you're awake next week, you could tune in live Tuesdays at midnight on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM, or you can stream it online at radio.adelaide.edu.au. We manage to stay up for it every week, so why can't you? The email is leftrightandcentre@live.com.au and the Facebook group is Left, Right and Centre. Get on there if you can. We've had quite a debate going in there this week about the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme. We'd love to hear your 2 cents on the issue. Cha-cha!